Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
Welcome to another episode of the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch. And in this day, we're going to talk about Joe Theismann's career-ending injury and the New York Giants' 10-0 start in 1990, as well as many other great Hall of Fame legendary stories. All this and more coming up in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. We are sure glad that you're joined us today. And we are going to give you a special presentation of our November 18th Best of Pigskin Dispatch. We have the history of November 18th for this great Gridiron Day. So enjoy.
First of all, we'd like to tell you that the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch podcast is growing, not just in the United States, but all over the world. Where over a dozen countries are listening to us on a regular basis. And we want to say hello to Australia, India, France, and United Kingdom, and our listeners in Canada and Luxembourg as well as many more countries that are listening. And our places in the United States are ranging from not only in Pennsylvania, Ohio, New York, the Great Lakes regions, we're seeing in Texas, Arizona, California, and many more spots too, like Florida. So we want to welcome all of our listeners, and let's get right to our November 18th football history headlines. And we'll start off in 1902. On that date, Rawlings is credited with introducing the first football shoulder pads when they introduced the Whitley's Armor Clothing. U.S. Patent 714079 was filed for by William P. Whitley, an executive at Rawlings. He did this on behalf of the Rawlings Sporting Goods Company. The product was made of felt and fiber, and though it offers poor protection compared to the pads of our era, it is a steep upgrade to what they had at the time, which was almost absolutely nothing, except the clothes that they were wearing. November 18th, 1905, in Birmingham, Alabama, the 10th Iron Bowl is played as Alabama shuts out rival Auburn 30-0 in the contest of a game played a year prior to the forward pass becoming legal in college football. November 18th, 1967, the Fighting Irish hit a milestone in the school's legendary football history. Notre Dame notches up victory number 500 for the program as the Irish run over Georgia Tech by the score of 36-3. November 18th, 1978, at Grant Field, Atlanta, Georgia, running back Vegas Ferguson sets a Fighting Irish record as he puts up 255 yards on the ground against Georgia Tech in a 38-21 victory for the Golden Domers. Ferguson, according to an archive story on nd.edu, set the tone for the day as he took the handoff through the right side of the line in the game's second play, 68 yards to the Tech 6-yard line.
He's to the pylon, touchdown!
November 18th, 1984, at Commonwealth Stadium in Edmonton, the 72nd playing of the Grey Cup took place. This championship game of the CFL was special as it was the first ever Grey Cup game played in Edmonton, according to the BlueBombers.com website. The game also marked the first time in nearly two decades that the Winnipeg Blue Bombers had made it to the title game of the CFL. Their opponent was a very gritty Hamilton Tiger Cats squad led by former Bomber quarterback Dieter Brock, who had just been traded to the Ticats a year earlier. The Cats struck first, with Brock sneaking the ball into the end zone for the early lead. At one point in the early second quarter, their lead had extended to 17-3, but that Hamilton momentum was short-lived. Winnipeg would pop off 27 points in the second quarter, setting a Grey Cup record, and they then rattled off the last 44 points of the game. What at first seemed to be all Hamilton quickly turned into a Bombers blowout, with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers defeating the Hamilton Tiger Cats 47-17. Quarterback Tom Clements, the very player Brock was traded for, was named the offensive MVP. Running back Sean Kehoe was the top Canadian, while top defender was Tyrone Jones, who set the Grey Cup record with 4 quarterback sacks in the game. November 18, 1985, Washington Redskins star quarterback Joe Theismann's NFL career has ended with what may have been one of the most vivid injuries witnessed in a nationally televised game, as you can see the bone in his leg break during a sack by the legendary New York Giants linebacker Lawrence Taylor. Speaking of the G-Men, November 18, 1990, the New York Giants run the record at 10-0 as the G-Men drop the Detroit Lions in a shutout 20-0 per the ProFootballReference.com website. The next 2 weeks of the season would give the Giants back-to-back losses to the Philadelphia Eagles and the San Francisco 49ers, having the team finish the season at 13-3 with another late-season loss to the Buffalo Bills. The Giants would get their revenge, though, on the Bills, though in Super Bowl 25, after Scott Norwood missed a game-ending field goal attempt, sailed wide right, and the Giants would win the game by the score of 20-19, with running back Otis Anderson winning the game's MVP. November 18, 2006, Mansfield University turned the lights out as it ended its football program more than 100 years after introducing the nighttime football game to the world. The Washington Post article from November 18, 2006 tells us how the Division II team finished at 0-10 in its final season and cut its football program, but it leaves a unique legacy. Mansfield hosted the first outdoor night football game on September 28, 1892. Then, called Mansfield State Normal School, it played a scoreless tie against Wyoming Seminary in Mansfield, PA. Happily, though, the story doesn't end on a sour note, as the college added football once again in 2007 as they joined the Collegiate Sprint Football League, where players must weigh in at 178 pounds or less to compete. Now let's take a break from our football history headlines for just a moment. Focus in on that subscribe button on the Embed Player. Click it so you get all the podcasts released right to you as soon as we release them. Also, you can reach us at pigskindispatch@gmail.com. Right now, I've got a message from one of my friends at the Sports History Network.
Hi, folks. Are you curious about some of the unique players, teams, games, and events of pro football's past? If you are, please check out my bi-weekly podcast, The Pigskin Past. I'm Joe Zagorski, a member of the Pro Football Writers of America and the Pro Football Researchers Association. I've written 3 books about pro football history, and I'm currently writing my 4th. Now, my era of expertise is the 1970s in the NFL. Heck, I even have a Facebook page by that title, and my very first book also has the same title, The NFL in the 1970s. But every now and then I check out a different era, so I might surprise you. Anyway, if you like pro football history, please check out my bi-weekly segment here called The Pigskin Past when you get a chance. I think you'll enjoy it.
Now, how about we celebrate some Hall of Fame gridiron birthdays? And we'll start with November 18th, 1934. In Modesto, California, Stanford University product defensive tackle Paul Wigan was born. Wigan was what we call today a stopper, as he punished any opponent that got in his way. The NFF tells us that Paul was a 2-time first-team All-American selection and was invited to participate in the East-West Shrine Game in 1956 and the Hula Bowl in 1957. Paul Wigan was nominated for entry into the College Football Hall of Fame in 2005. Paul made it into the big league when he was done with school, and he spent his entire 11-year career playing as a defensive end with the Cleveland Browns until his retirement following the 1967 season. November 18, 1948, in Cherryville, North Carolina, the great Ohio State DB Jack Tatum was born into this world. He was often called the assassin for his hard-hitting style of play, but he also could blanket a receiver in coverage, too. The National Football Foundation writes that Jack was a unanimous first-team All-American selection in 1970 and a consensus pick in 1969. Tatum earned first-team All-Conference honors 3 times and was named the National Defensive Player of the Year in 1970. A 3-year starter, Tatum led the Buckeyes to a 27-2 record, 2 national championships, and at least a share of the 3 Big Ten Conference titles. The College Football Hall of Fame placed a plaque in honor of Jack Tatum's fine play in their Gridiron Greats Museum in 2004. After he completed college, Tatum was a first-round pick by the Oakland Raiders in a 1971 NFL draft. Tatum played in the NFL for 10 seasons, 9 with Oakland and 1 in Houston, and was a 3-time Pro Bowl selection. November 18, 1956, in Los Angeles, California, Warren Moon, the outstanding long-tenured quarterback, was born. When you play quarterback at the professional level for 22 seasons, you know you're going to have to be something special. Warren Moon did it in multiple leagues. As the offensive leader of the University of Washington's Huskies, he was named the most valuable player in the 1978 Rose Bowl after his team recorded a victory over the Wolverines of Michigan 27-20. According to the Pro Football Hall of Fame's bio, Warren Moon had left NFL scouts confused when he came out of the University of Washington. NFL teams told Warren that he would need to play in a position other than quarterback to get drafted in the NFL. Having faith in his abilities as a signal caller, Warren made a bold choice and opted to play in the position he loved in the CFL with the Edmonton Eskimos. All he did was win 5 straight CFL Grey Cup championships with the Eskimos franchise. The CFLHOF.ca website states that Warren ended his CF career in 1983 as the league's leading passer with 308 completions of 664 attempts for 5,648 yards and 31 TDs. The Canadian Football League placed Moon into their Hall of Fame in 2001. Prior to the 1984 season, Moon took his north of the border experience and signed on with the Houston Oilers, and in his first season in the light blue, he set a club record with 3,338 passing yards. Moon helped the Oilers deploy the run-and-shoot offense that gave NFL defensive coordinators a lot of sleepless nights. Warren was a big hit in the NFL at quarterback, just like he envisioned himself to do. In fact, he stuck with the league that once told him not to play quarterback for 17 seasons, tossing just shy of 50,000 yards in his career and playing not only with the Oilers, but with the KC Chiefs, Minnesota Vikings, and Seattle Seahawks. The Pro Football Hall of Fame inducted Warren Moon into their hallowed halls in the year 2006. November 18, 1969, in Elizabeth, New Jersey, the very shifty wide receiver slash kick returner of the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame, Raghib the Rocket Ishmael, was born. Ishmael graced the green grass of Notre Dame Stadium from 1988 through the 1990 seasons, according to footballfoundation.org's website. Rocket Ishmael led the Irish to an undefeated national championship season in 1988, and that was wrapped up in a victory over West Virginia in the 1989 Fiesta Bowl. The speedster was a 2-time first-team All-American and earned consensus honors in the 1989 as a kick returner. Rocket also earned a unanimous All-American honors in 1990 at the positions of wide receiver and as a return man. The nationally acclaimed player was a 1990 Walter Camp Player of the Year, as well being in concert with also being named the Sporting News College Player of the Year and finished as a runner-up for the Heisman Trophy. No doubt that Raghib had to go shopping for a bigger trophy case. The National Football Foundation voted Raghib Ishmael into their College Football Hall of Fame in the year 2019. After college, Ishmael was going to be selected as the first overall pick in the 1991 NFL draft by the Dallas Cowboys, but chose to play north of the border instead. The LA Raiders also put a pick for him later with their own rights in case he changed his mind about the NFL. Rocket played in the CFL with the Toronto Argonauts for 2 seasons after college and was a member of the 1991 Grey Cup Championship team. In the Canadian League, he accumulated 1,951 receiving yards, 1,925 kickoff return yards, 1,216 punt return yards, while scoring 21 touchdowns. He did play in the NFL eventually with the Raiders as a rookie. Ishmael recorded 353 receiving yards. The next year, he recorded 513 receiving yards and 5 touchdowns. And in 1995, the Raiders' first season back in Oakland, he had recorded 491 yards receiving. He eventually would end his career with the Carolina Panthers.
Pigskin Dispatch.
We hope the information we provided you today got those gridiron juices flowing. And don't worry, tomorrow's podcast is just as action-packed as we talk about three defining games in Notre Dame football lore and a 2018 NFL shootout of the young guns at quarterback, all coming up on your football history headlines for November 19th. So make sure you hit that subscribe button or email us at pigskindispatch@gmail.com or catch us on Twitter and Facebook for all the action. You can also find us on the Sports History Network, the headquarters of Sports Yesteryear, with a lot of other really good sports history podcasts that you'd like to catch, including many football podcasts. So make sure you catch it at sportshistorynetwork.com. Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts, is found right here on the Sports History Network.